Blog Talk Radio.
And the thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. But I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. St. John 10, verse 10. Are there any questions?
Hey, watch it, baby. This guy is heavy on religion.
I can see this has become a struggle between good and evil. Satan has a question.
Yes, sir, Chaplain Gill, but since neither one of us are God, I don't think either one of us are in any position to say who's good and who's evil.
Why don't you just ask your question?
We were discussing the disciples. What color were they?
Well, I don't think we know that for certain.
But they were Hebrews, were they not?
That's right.
As was Jesus. Jesus was also a Hebrew.
Why don't you just ask your question?
What color were the original Hebrews?
I have told you that we don't know that for certain.
Then you can't believe for certain that Jesus was white.
Just a moment. God is white. Isn't it obvious?
Well, that is obvious, but we don't know if it's obvious that God is white. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that Jesus did not have blonde hair and blue eyes. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that the images of Jesus that are on prison walls and churches throughout the world are not historically correct, because history teaches us that Jesus was born in a region where the people had color. There's proof in the very Bible that you ask us to read in Revelation's first chapter, verse 14 and 15, that Jesus had hair like wool and feet the color of brass.
Just what are you saying?
I'm not saying anything. I'm proving to you that Jesus was not, and I might quote one of our Indian brothers, he was not a pale face. Amen.
Isn't that interesting?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of minds. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Yes, yes, yes. Folks, welcome to yet another edition, fun, fiery, fact-finding edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. This is the infamous midweek in review edition of the show. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I see our friend Q-Storm is in the chat room. Let me just tell him right away, he must reboot, refresh. He's saying that he cannot hear us. So I know we are live. This is not Memorex. To a quick groove, folks, we got to talk about a lot of things. The captain has his infamous diatribe. I'm going to talk about Ben Stein, actor, just all-around foolish person. So we'll get into it. This is Erykah Badu, Out My Mind, Just in Time remix, giving you the very best of urban alternative groove. We'll be right back. And again, let's groove.
Recovering artist, lover over lover.
Okay, we're back once again, giving you the best of urban alternative black rock groove, Out My Mind, Just in Time remix by Erykah Badu. Folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd Radio, a.k.a. Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the captain, I believe he's on Rigel 4, dealing with the lower tier as always. Captain, it's your time. Stop playing with those Negroes. Get back to work, sir. Beam you up. Let's get to it. Boom, need you. Let's get to it. Captain Kirk, are we having problems? Hold on. Let me see if I can get him in. Cap, are you there? Cap, are you there? Can the folks in the chat room hear me? It appears we're having some difficulties. Okay. I don't know what happened to Captain. All right, these things happen. I'm pretty sure we'll get him back on. Captain did have or does have a diatribe. I don't know why I see him. Sorry, folks. This is live radio. I don't know why I can't seem to get him on the line. Let me try one more time. Cap, are you there? Okay. I see Bison saying Captain may have a woman that doesn't want to be bothered right now. That's a distinct possibility, but he's aware we have a show. Folks, we're just going to power through. The captain, I would assume he will be calling in at some point, or I'll just have to buzz him back in. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about was, of course, the midterm elections. And you know, it's unfortunate, but this is something that we already could detect. It seems as if minorities, poor folk, black folk, women, that we are only interested when it's the national elections. The elections that really count, the local elections, we're not on top of this. So as predicted, the elections have garnered a Republican win. I'm trying to call the captain now. Let's just try this over again as I'm discussing politics. Okay. I tried. Oh, wait a minute. All right. Sorry about that, folks. Again, live radio. As I was discussing, I'm assuming the captain, if you hear me, just call on in. You know what? Let me try one more time because it looked like he was almost. Let me try one more time, folks. Sorry about that. I'm sure he will call back in. Now there's a delay. All right. It is what it is. For some reason, there appears to be a delay with our boards, and I can't seem to get the captain back. So, as I was saying, I'm sure he will call in and fit in when he can. Again, folks, these things do happen. This is live radio. Before my attempt at trying to get the captain back on the line, I was talking about the Republicans winning the Senate. And we've known that really since this president taking over. It's been a difficult road for him, extremely difficult. It appears that the Republicans have been just not wanting to deal with this man in any stretch of the imagination. We know from the get-go, and listen, this is about political gamesmanship, political chess. And what's going to happen is he's going to have to use his veto power, his executive privilege. He's been doing that thus far. So this will be interesting. And from a historical perspective, listen, the second half of one's presidency, if you're fortunate enough to be elected twice, he's a lame duck president. I mean, that's just the way it is. We know that, but he's really going to be a lame duck president in the sense of his inability to pass legislation, and he's not going to have the benefit of a Democratic regime, majority-wise, to help his initiatives. And we're going to probably see more nonsense when it comes down to Obamacare, where he will not be able to it's highly, highly doubtful that you will see Obamacare dismantled. But it's not like they're not going to try. What's the record with the Republicans? I think 56 times they tried to dismantle Obamacare, so I'm pretty sure that's going to continue. We might hear more Benghazi, more deflection. But one may say, well, as an African-American male, why are you a Republican? Why are you a conservative? I learned a long time ago, this is about gamesmanship. And I've said this before on the show. Look at how the swing states operate during the national elections. Look at how they operate. Look at Ohio. Look at Florida, how all the conservatives and the Democrats, everyone has to hone in on those states. They get the most attention. And what I'm having a difficult time understanding is how come people of color can't seem to understand how that's exactly how politics operate. If they know you are going to be loyal democratically in your voting to a fault, why would they appeal to you? I mean, you give your vote blindly. And this is, you know, there's precedent for this. Think about the fact that, let's look at Obamacare. Obamacare originates with Romney Care when he was the governor of Massachusetts. They're virtually identical. So, was it socialist, and I'm saying that in quotes, when Romney ushered in that initiative in Massachusetts. Actually, folks in Massachusetts, actually, from my understanding, for the most part, under the Nixon administration, affirmative action was expanded. The roots of affirmative action actually date back to the Kennedy administration. But as far as the expansion of it, rooted under a Republican president, and that was Nixon. Under Nixon. And Nixon certainly did not like black folk. You can listen to the tapes. So if you're seeing certain policies that one could say were advantageous to people of color, and they occurred under a Republican presidency, why wouldn't some black folks position themselves to be Republican Not that you have to necessarily love being a Republican, but I'm saying you're not always going to win as a Democrat, clearly. So if you have enough people, enough representation in a certain party, there's nothing to stop, let's say, Obamacare. Oh, I see that the captain. What happened?
I had an emergency. A real serious problem. All right, I rectified
it.
All
right. All right, no problem. I was just talking about, well, you know what? I will revisit my midterm election rant. I got kind of caught off guard there, Captain, because I didn't know what happened. So are you prepared for your diatribe?
Well, I'm always prepared. I got a million of these things. I'll just make it brief due to time constraints.
All right. All right.
So let me start with this. All right. From time to time on this show, people hear me say energy times time equals action. What does that mean? And what does that mean to the black community? So, we have some dominant means in the black community. Not all blacks, of course, but I would say that these means are dominant throughout the black communities. Coming late and being lazy. I'm going to address being lazy at this given point. Now, we've all had legitimate reasons for being lazy. It is an excuse nonetheless, but we've had legitimate reasons. You worked late, you were with the kids, anything, you know, you have legitimate reasons, but it is being lazy. Energy times time equals action. If you are lazy, you cannot and will not be able to put in the right amount of energy and the right amount of time in order to get the action you want. Let me repeat that. If you are lazy, and this should be self-explanatory, this is the captain taking physics, university science, and applying it to the matrix. So the wage slave zombie can understand. Science is just not abstract as the dual doctorate scientists make it. It's not happening in the vacuum. It's happening right in front of you. So let me repeat one more time. Energy times time equals action. When you are lazy, pertaining to anything, it could be anything, you are not putting in the right amount of energy and the right amount of time in order to get the action, which is the result, okay, that you want in respect to anything that you want to do. That could be talking to a girl. That could be talking to that could be building a business. That could be trying to get a promotion on the job. That could be anything. So it's real simple. It's real simple. So we have these means within the black communities, not all blacks, not all, that at times make us lazy. And I'm not talking about 13-hour, 14-hour, 16-hour days. Just regular, maybe doing a little extra 20, 30 minutes, maybe an hour to get you over the top so you can get the right action. Because it is energy times time equals action. So that being said, being lazy is a destructive force to anything that you want to accomplish. That's all, folks. I cut the diatribe down. Back over to Sir Afro Nerd. That is self-explanatory. So there you have it. Let's go.
Yeah, that's cutting straight to the point, isn't it? You know, due diligence means everything. I would agree with that. Everything you said was right on point, Captain. Let me get back quickly. I don't want to take too much time on this. Again, my apologies for being a little bit out of sorts. Before your diatribe, I was talking about the midterm elections, and I've been listening to my fair share of urban radio, Captain, and as you said, these memes. Urban radio is lazy. Urban radio is lazy. You know, I'm going to get away, and we spoke about this behind the scenes, I'm going to get away from, like, zeroing in on certain personalities. I'm going to get away from that. I'm just going to give a general perspective on urban radio and the fact that it is in such a decline. The information isn't really being disseminated. It's more about yuck, 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 toe tapping, shoe shining, watermelon juggling. So, you know, if you had a real powerful urban radio presence like you did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe what happened last night might not have happened. Maybe you would have been able to garner enough folks of color to ensure that this president had maintained a majority in the House and in the Senate, but that is not the case. So now he's up against a wall. But he has been this way since his presidency to a certain degree. I mean, I believe the first 2 years he had a narrow lead with a Democratic regime, but that's not the case now. I mean, this has been one of the biggest upsets in the last 60 years with Republican dominance in both houses. But something else that we said behind the scenes is that, listen, I have, as far as my credentials, an MA and a BA in political science, or more specifically a BA in political science / pre-law, an MA in government and politics and public administration. So, you know, I have studied this, and I'm not naive to think that politics be all for black upward mobility. But oftentimes, and I think I talk about this to you all the time, why do we think, I mean, Thomas Sowell talked about this. I think I even have an audio clip somewhere where he goes into great detail, the great conservative educator Thomas Sowell goes into great detail, Dr. Sowell, goes into great detail about there really has not been any clear precedent for upward mobility through politics. I mean, you get favors here and there, but I mean, as far as absolute upward mobility, it's not going to happen. I see other groups, ethnicities, racial groups that appear to be moving onward and upward through what the captain talked about, and this is going to be, this is probably a conservative meme, but, you know, I don't know if it really could be deconstructed, but hard work does have a lot to do with it. Hard work, diligence, education, focusing on the sciences, focusing on math. We see folks that are willing to make the type of sacrifices that many indigenous folks here are not willing, you know, cross racially. Even if you just lay off a black folk, just what Americans are doing versus immigrants. I've seen poor Latin folk who are able to coalesce, Captain, able to make their dollars work, circulate their dollars in my face, clearly able to circulate the dollars and able to create businesses. They're able to patronize each other. I mean, there's just clear things that we're just not doing. So, I mean, how much of that would politics be able to deal with? How would politics be able to intervene in that kind of thing? I'm going to ask you that directly, Captain. I mean, even if we made some moves politically, I mean, so far some of this stuff is just symbolic. I was never a believer that President Obama was going to be a panacea for all of black folks' ills. I never thought that. I was proud to see to be tribal, I was proud to see the brother in there visually, to see the family in there. I was proud to see that. But really expecting to be able to wave his black hand and to make life better for black citizens just because he's black is too obvious. They weren't going to allow him to do that anyway. And even if he did have certain powers, how much could he really accomplish? for black folk. There's going to have to be some will on the part of the black citizenry themselves. I mean, this just makes sense. You know, you're not addressing the messaging in your community. You know, I rail about World Star Hip Hop incessantly. I'm not going to go into that too deeply because we know what that is. But the messaging is not being addressed. Violence in these communities is not being addressed. We're not dealing with the out of wedlock births. We're not emphasizing scholarship to the degree that we need to be. I mean, there are certain key points that if you take politics out of it and just dealt with some of the basics, we will be able to move. Being able to circulate that dollar multiple times, let's say at least twice. At least twice, Captain. Allegedly, the black community, we are the greatest consumers, but I think it's close to $1 trillion the black community is able to generate on a fiduciary level. If a $1 trillion runs through the black community and you don't know where that money is going, whose fault is that? I mean, it has nothing to do with Republican, Democratic. I mean, you know, listen, we reside in black communities. Spike Lee talks about this stuff, but he doesn't want to be completely honest. We've seen empty buildings that remain empty for decades. And then someone like Spike Lee gets upset because Asian man comes in there and opens up a cleaners in a vacant building that's been vacant for years, or opens up a restaurant, or sells hair back to you. Whose fault is that? We have callers. Let's open up the lines. But I'm really. This is the post midterm election fallout. This is real talk right now. I mean, to be so overly reliant. That's my impression, Captain. Tribally, we appear to be overly reliant on politics to take away all of our problems. When a lot of this stuff on a grassroots level has to be dealt with one way or another. I have more tangentially connected. Adrian Peterson. What does that have to do with politics? After this call, I'll talk about it. Something I noticed about him, I believe he had some kind of court dealing with, you know, his child abuse case. Something that annoyed me visually. I'll talk about it. It's related to all of this. It's all wrapped up in the same ball of wax. 703, welcome to the Midweek and Review edition of Afro Nerd Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
My name is Bison from Life. I'm calling from Northern Virginia. How you gentlemen doing?
Hey, Bison.
What's up, man?
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, hey. Sorry about the screwed up intro.
Well, you got to stop with using that lower-tier equipment, people. That's the problem.
He has a point.
Right, hey, gentlemen, great show, and I know it's going to go all over the place eventually, but I think we need to separate what happened last night, because that's just per election cycle. With the Republicans who won were supposed to win. They were in red states. The only one that was probably out of the ordinary was in Maryland. Anthony Brown ran a piss-poor campaign. I don't think that, you know, a lot of blacks, older blacks, came out to vote, but young folks stayed home. But your narrative about politics and upper mobility is a very timely one, because it goes back to those adage, like I'm sure the Oracle and a lot of blacks from that generation basically said that during the Civil Rights Movement, we should have had an economic
component
rescue team outside of a, you know, okay, yeah, I can go in the restaurant and sit next to whoever, but if I don't have the money to go in there, you know, so what if I had the right to vote? My father and a lot of people from history, you know, my family took that view because, you know, economically we abandoned the infrastructure we had, and you've spoken on that on many of your podcasts. Some of the listeners have heard of, say, the Black Wall Street, but many Black American communities had, you know, via Jim Crow, we were forced to be independent and to create a business climate where we can thrive. And now with Jim Crow removed, we become more dependent now than we were 100 years ago coming out of slavery. I mean, I know that sounds, maybe I'm far-reaching with that, but I don't think I'm that too far off.
No, not really. Not really. It's pretty accurate.
And one of the things we don't really talk about in the Black community is land ownership. And, I mean, it's still a big thing in the South, but I think the further north you go, it's sort of because of, you know, the urbanization of the Black community has become less and less something discussed. But we don't own any land. We don't own anything. I mean, we're now, you know, we have Koreans selling us hair. We have Mideasterners selling us gas and cigarettes. When we have other races selling us our homes, what do we own? And then we get mad when they think that we're less than human. When you want someone outside of the community to educate you, feed you, give you a job and some other thing, when you get mad when they treat you less than human? I'm going to stop there. I'm not going to get too much on a tangent, but it all comes back to money. And like you said before, we are a consumer class. Everyone knows that. They let a few through the door, like a Puffy, a Jay-Z, and a few more. But at the end of the day, you know, many of us don't want to go the entrepreneurial route to create our own jobs. And thus you create a dependent people who think they can vote their way out of poverty.
Well, Bison, I want you to stay on for a minute because you made me think about something. And I've mentioned this before. This is pretty much part of the historical record. But you go to YouTube and look at this kind of stuff. I believe there's documentaries on this. But think about the top flight athletes during the 60s. In particular, you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. At that point, I think might have been Lew Alcindor. You had Jim Brown, and you had Muhammad Ali. And those three men were conscious enough in the mid-60s, at the height of their powers, to actually talk about, and I think they developed something, but I don't know if it was able, obviously, I don't know if it went all the way to fruition, but they were at the nascent stage of creating some kind of business development thing for the Black community. And they were trying to use their access and their popularity to develop some kind of business strategy as Black athletes. Now, think about that. This was in the mid-60s. Think about the level of consciousness to go there with that. And that was highly controversial. And that's when you really start to tip the apple cart, is when you see Black power connected to Black business and self-determination. And that was going back 50 years ago now. Now you have athletes who are generating infinitely far more money than those three did, and you're not hearing that level of consciousness to think of something like that. You certainly have enough athletes, even more athletes, that could do something like that at a much higher level, but we're not really seeing it. We have Magic Johnson, but he's out there by himself. Okay, but actually getting some of these entertainment, because I'm not really fond of entertainers per se when it comes to today's entertainers. When we think about the Sydneys and the Harry Belafontes and the Ruby Dees, you're talking about highly evolved, intellectualized Black folk. You're not seeing those kind of blacks today, not really. But think about what in the mid-60s, when you really did not have that kind of financial access. Now we have the financial access, but we're seeing folks like Adrian Peterson being infantilized. That's my point. And I just happen to. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bison. Go ahead.
Well, I know they're not your favorite people, but I'm going to have to use them as a model. That your favorite rapper, what was his name, who started Cash Money Records?
I know you're going to talk about that. Baby and Lil Wayne.
Master P. I'm going back a little earlier.
Okay,
Master P.
He started.
No limit.
He started basically out the trunk, ground level economics, where he wanted to control his own distribution network. And then he went into sports and to some other things and just overreached and, you know, the piles that we kind of pulled it apart. So I don't want to say it's never been done. And a lot of people started to give pushback to Jay-Z's Roc Nation because he's signing up everybody. Now, I don't know what they're doing in the back end in regards to how the wealth is distributed. But if you're talking about a black-controlled entity, I mean, there are some examples. They're just few and far between. So I may have to get away from you on that a little bit.
Well, I guess my issue, Bison, is we know that there are pockets of this. Even to this day, there are pockets. But I'm saying with the Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I'm sorry, I think Bill Russell was that. I think it was four of them. It was Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Muhammad Ali. They were the four top athletes, bar none, during the mid-60s, and they were coming together for some kind of financial development plan. And there was a lot of news, a lot of media was centered around them, and people were nervous because it looked like, okay, wait a minute, these guys could do something. And now, 40-plus years later, you have athletes that are their own satellites, but there seems to be no infrastructure or no desire to erect an infrastructure to coalesce all these guys together to get something going on. And that's just in athletics. But there's enough. You're talking about millions, if not billions, that these guys have access to, and they're not. You're not seeing them pooling their resources to get something going.
I think that photo you're using was them protesting Ali, avoiding the draft.
No. There was. I know about that too. But there was an economic plan those guys had gotten together to do.
It is a summit called the Black Economic Summit, and it came out of them.
So repeat that again. You said it was an economic summit?
Yeah, they had an economic summit called the Black Economic Union. I'm just pulling it up right now. But I know, it kind of went, it started and then kind of petered out. But I know what you're talking about.
That's why, listen, for those guys, they were extremely high-profile men of color during a time when black folks were really. The 60s was a very tumultuous time, Bison. You know this. And anything could have happened. You had political leaders, black and white, being killed. You had the Vietnam War. You had the women's movement. I mean, you're talking about a time we may never see again. So if there was ever a time to start something, that was it. And we don't have the follow-through skills. I mean, think about – I'm going to mention one other thing. I'm going to go to a break. Because this is all wrapped up with our political state. I'm not afraid to discuss economics. See, for some reason, we're so caught up in police brutality and this ancillary stuff when it all boils down to economics. The captain and myself, we live in New York City, all right? There's clearly Jewish economic power base here. And we see before our very eyes how the police treat them a little bit differently because of that economic base. And it's not to be envied. It's not to be angry about. But they're doing what you're supposed to do, especially the Hasidic community in New York. I see police officers They're practically valets for these people. No lie. They're practically valets, but they have a power base to make certain demands. Black folks do not have the power base, so you're going to constantly be running on a treadmill in place where everybody else is running outside moving forward.
I mean, Eber, when you say black folks, are you saying black Americans? Because if I understand in New York, we have a West Indian community that's starting to move up economically.
Well, okay, you know what? If you want to be more accurate, yes. If you want to talk about black Americans, you're correct. The West Indian community and the African community, they appear to be. Or there's a large faction within those communities that appear to be moving onward and upward. They value education. There's a different cultural component. They're not lockstep with American blacks when it comes to notions of grievance-style politics. This is correct. And when the captain used the term communities, plural, communities, that is really pinpoint accuracy about what's going on with black folk. There's this misnomer about there being a black community, like we're all in this together. No, 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 no. You have Nigerians, Ugandans, South Africans, all type, you know, Costa Ricans, all kinds of different blacks from the Caribbean. Yeah, all these different types of black folks with different agendas. But we're led to believe we're all under one umbrella, and you are correct. You are correct. But by and large, the media focus are on black Americans and black American failure. And to be correct about that, it's a faction within black America, black Americans, because you do have an educated middle class of thriving black American people. But they're not the face of black failure. The face of black failure, that is that issue also. All of it is one similar ball of wax as far as presentation. In the 60s, when you saw black folks actually being somewhat more effective, Bison, when you saw black folks from the religious communities, when you had religious leaders that were actually effective, that was middle-class black people. Harry and all of them, Harry, Ruby Dee, the things that were actually being done, they were middle-class black folks. Somewhere within the last 25 years, that has shifted.
Hey, Deaver, I had folks in the movement, so let me make a correction there. A lot of the folk soldiers in the South weren't middle-class black people. They were maids and butlers, and people had the blue-collar jobs, especially in the Montgomery bus boycott. So I don't want to, you know, let's, I'm not, you know,
now,
I'm not.
This is what I said. I said the face. There's a difference. The face. When you talk about, let's take Rosa Parks. Now, we know full and well there were other in the civil rights movement that did what she did. Okay, that was very much an orchestrated thing. Even Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896 was an orchestrated thing. They originally had a 50-year-old woman. I believe she might even still be alive. I can't recollect her name, but she goes down in the annals of history as well. But she, because she was young, because she was a out-of-wedlock mother, the higher ups within the civil rights movement were uncomfortable with her as far as presentation. They got a middle class seamstress with a certain comportment to be the face of that Montgomery bus boycott. The face of the civil rights movement was a middle class one. When you think about the young people that were in those lunch counters. There were college students. When you think of Dr. King, his father, King Sr., was a well-established minister. When you talk about the people who were actually running the movement, even the Black Power movement, these were extremely well-educated Black folk. When it came down for speaking and planning and presentation, it was not lower-tier Black people, Bison. You know that. A foot soldier is different than the general.
Well, I'm a give a little bit of information about myself, but not too much. But my father went to college with Dr. King, so I got to hear the real deal.
But you know.
And the real deal on a lot of it was this. There was a lot of pushback because
on
he
him.
Was young and he was radical for that time. In regards to the face of it, they wanted the face to be Roy Wilkins, maybe Philip Randolph, you know, the older generation.
Yeah, but look, but still, Bison. Look at the Giants.
Correct.
I mean,
well, you know what the difference was then than it is now? At the beginning of the movement, it was covered by the Black press. The Amsterdam News. And that Black press is pretty much going away. So they were able to
What did I say again? I said urban media is non-existent.
Yeah.
Listen, you're listening to the show for a reason. We know what the problem is.
Whose fault is WBLS selling out to? Whose fault is that?
Well, hey, we know that's a capitalist.
Hey, you're a capitalist, but they didn't make money.
Yeah, but that's a repeated issue also, with we sell out, and we go for the money, instead of going for the power or going for the keeping that power in the community.
Let me ask you one question. I'll hang up. I know
sure.
You gotta move on.
Sure.
You're in Capitol in New York. Why does Charlie Rangel get reelected?
Oh, come on.
I want to hear the New York excuse for why Charlie Rangel has been there since, 69?
And they might have been since 72, I think. 72, because Adam Clayton Powell Jr., he was up until the early 70s, he was still there. I think it was like 72, actually. But you're close, something like that. We're in the same ballpark. He's been there for years, since we've been born.
I'm more disturbed by, you know, we can get into preferences on voting if you want to vote GOP. I have no problem. I've voted across many different aisles. No problem. But we are so underserved by our so-called elected leaders. But where is the tsunami from the electorate to move these guys out who don't serve an interest? And I'm using you. I mean, we got it here in D.C., the D.C. area, so I'm picking on you, but New York is kind of a more egregious example.
Who's your boy? That bitch shit set me up.
Mary Barry. He's a city councilman, so he's,
of
you
course
know,
he is.
He's the mayor for life. But Charlie Rangel has been in the Congress since we were called Negroes, you know, and he's still there.
Well, listen, the deal, to answer your question, you know what the answer is. It deals with the, make it simple. The living color.
1971,
the living color
to be correct.
Yeah, I knew it was 71, 72. The living color single, Cult of Personality, explains all of this. We like these people, even if it's to our detriment. We like them, but it's not about liking someone. Even with what we did, I'm bouncing around in topics, but it's all to me. It's about economics and economic power, and about garnering respect, and having excuses about these people are coming into our communities and they're buying our property and they're setting up businesses. Well, they've been sitting there empty for decades. There was nothing. If you got off the speaker line. Black people, if you got out the sneaker line and stopped paying, poor people stopped paying $400 for sneakers for their kids that they will end up scuffing by the end of the day, and start to pool their resources and get even investment clubs, maybe you too can put in, get your own hairstyling establishment, or I should say hair distributorship. And in the 70s, the Oracle can tell you, I mentioned this on air, we did have black folks that were in control of black hair products, black hair care, and black distributors. We knew millionaires personally who were black distributors. Somewhere between 1970-something and 1990-something, it shifted from black to Asian. And I'm not hating on Asian folks because they saw an opportunity. There was nothing to stop black folks from doing the same thing. But the cult of personality. Captain, on some level, again, I'm not that bit out of shape about the results from the midterm election. They were predicted. My issue is, why can't we disengage ourselves from this cult of personality and start to talk about this, about what's really going on and what's really necessary, and figuring out a way to recirculate the black dollar. When you had all the redlining of districts, you had poll taxes, you had grandfather clauses, pig laws, all that stuff, Captain, all the legal impediments before the Civil Rights Act was signed, all those legal impediments, and black men were still able to have businesses and still able to circulate the dollar multiple times in greater duress. Now, how do you explain that? You have far more rights legally in 2014 than your grandfather or great-grandfather ever could have conceived of 50, 60, 70 years ago, and yet you had the black dollar circulating more during his time than in our time. How can that be? No one's answering these questions. Captain? Any thoughts on that? Are you going to go to a groove?
Well, that's a long-standing answer that we somewhat addressed before. And due to time constraints, we need about another half an hour to break it down. It has a lot to do with a lot of things. A lot of different dynamics are playing on that. You know, the fact that black people don't like each other, the fact that, you know, the liberal agenda. There's a lot of things that play into this, to the point where we get to this point. But it seems like we need to be squeezed into a reality. That's just looking at this at a glance. And then we start huddling up, just like more or less what happened on the slave ship. Remember, we're from warring tribes. So in essence, we really don't like each other. But once we're squeezed into reality, things, and we're left with no choice, things begin to happen. That's just at a glance. There's more than that going on. And we need a long-winded discussion to break down all the factions that actually have gotten us to this point. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
All right, let's go to a quick urban alternative groove. This is a mashup between Yasiin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def, and, of course, the great, late great Marvin Gaye. This is Living for the Funk featuring Toshi, Yasiin Bey. We'll be right back. Let's groove. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back once again. Excellent mashup. I believe you can still get this through okplayer.com, where you can simply Google it. It's a free download, and this is called Living for the Funk, featuring Toshi, the Yasin Gay download, Yasin being Yasin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def, and, of course, Marvin Gaye. So it's a, the entire album is devoted to somewhat of an homage to the late, great Marvin Gaye. Getting back to the fold, folks, this is the midweek edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. You know, what I was saying before, I want to get into Captain, the Nixon, I believe, was he a speechwriter for Nixon? I believe so. He goes back a little bit. Ben Stein, we know him for being an actor, being somewhat of a personality, a game show host. He called Obama the most racist president in history, or in the national history, which is completely, I guess we're supposed to sidestep the presidents that own black folks, and Obama's supposed to be worse than those folks. But, I mean, that's just, you almost don't want to get into it because it's laughable, you know, but hyperbole is what sells right now, so it is what it is. But I did want to mention something else. I was thinking about Adrian Peterson, the football player, and I was speaking to the Oracle earlier, and I was telling him how I just have a problem with grown black men putting themselves in positions where they have to be scolded by someone as if they're an infant. It's all in the same ball of wax, Captain. It appears that we're in this malaise as black folk, where we're still victims. We still feel like we're victimized repeatedly. Folks, pick up. It's a 20-plus-year-old book. Shelby Steele's Content of Our Character. It really deconstructs the notion of victimhood. How one can access power through victimization in an insane, doesn't make any sense on its surface, but it when he explains it, somehow folks are able to garner a type of power. It's not the desired power. Desirable power is from political access or through economic access, mostly through economic access. That's the most desirable, tangible victimization. But the problem is that when you are overly reliant on being a victim, it means you never have to take responsibility for your own actions. And that is the question. That is the conundrum, that you will, at some point, you must look at yourself in the mirror. It is inevitable. It's just that we are at a point where we are trying our hardest to avoid the inevitable. I mean, inevitably, you're going to have to go to school, get a trade, start a business, maintain your family, legal nonsense. I mean, these are things that you will have to do if you want to succeed in this life. Maintain your health, maintain your mental faculties. There are just certain things that are just basics. And some of us are missing the basics. Our diets are poor, our musical taste or our some of our art is poor. You know, the art that you listen to is a type of diet. You know, listening to jazz, listening to blues, listening to classical music, shouting out Sergio Mims, there's a different result in that type of art, going to plays, as opposed to eating popcorn and sugar and listening to Waka Flocka or Little Bootsy or Young Thug or Slim Thug or any other thug I can think of. It is a type of diet. So imagine what would happen if the messaging were different, Captain. That's the part that confuses me. I look at Black Achievement, friend of the show, Black Achievement. He says, why should blacks have went to the polls? Listen, I said this before. I think BH just coming in now. But I said this before. I'm not even comfortable with promoting this wholesale trope that the way to black upward mobility or black movement is through politics. You know, maybe you devote some of your political muscle, or I should say some of your belief system towards politics. I'm not saying you should throw politics out like, you know, the baby out of the throw the baby out with the bathwater. But you shouldn't put all of your might behind politics. You know, economics, education, science, religion, whatever. There are other ways to move in society, but it seems as if we're on this the perfect analogy, Captain. Running on a treadmill, in place, and going nowhere. That is the black analogy right now, is that we are literally on a treadmill running in place and making no moves. What are your thoughts, Captain? Then we're going to talk about Ben Stein.
Well, I think, you know, some people are running on a treadmill. I think others are on a curb with a beer and watching cars go by. That's what I think a lot of them are doing. You see, here's the reality of the situation. When you adopt victimization culture, this is what happens. That's a failure, as far as I'm concerned. It's a full stop. That's a failure. And the people on the top who did not adopt this victimization culture, they look and say, well, you know, we have to get our own businesses. We have to go to school. We have to, you know, stop making babies. Okay, yeah. But you have to understand something. Person at the top, let's say the doctorate black person, all right, the well-to-do in the black community, two-parent household, black community. The person on the bottom who decided, not all, but the person on the bottom who decided to adopt victimization culture, you are speaking Chinese to that person. You are actually speaking above their head when you say something like that. You could speak that to the person that has the same type of spirit, someone that's in your same ilk, or maybe a little bit below you, but not to those people. With these people, you have to speak baseline language. And this is what I keep saying, all right? You have to understand what a lot of these individuals, their mindset, or where they are, time and space. No high school diploma. Not all now, but a lot of us. No high school diploma. No driver's license, no bank account. And here's the kicker. Someone from an outside body has to tell you how to operate with your own operative words, own sexual organs, because you have 3 and 4 babies out of wedlock. Not all, though, black people or brown people, if you would like. So these type of individuals cannot perceive that type of language coming from the top. You have to speak baseline language and get them to the baseline. Then we can start to do other things, get the businesses, go to college, do other things. You understand? Because these individuals right now, they're just all over the place. Total madness. Does it make any sense? Doesn't make any sense. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffel, man.
Yeah. I keep on kind of getting in and out of the Adrian Peterson thing. I guess my main thing is, because to me it's tangentially connected to this conversation, he's representative of a type of mindset that is pervasive in the black community. Not just black people, I mean, but as far as what's harming us, it's that, you know, he's barely 30 years old. All these kids with different women, Captain, and we're talking about someone who has a certain salary that would allow him a certain power base, a certain level of autonomy, and he has crippled himself. The need for multiple women that you probably were not in love with to have to spill sperm the way that he has spilled this sperm. Sorry to be so vulgar, but that's what it is. And it is so many young black men. Forget about just men who do not have the means, but think about the ones who have the means and they are still conducting themselves that way. Now imagine someone who I guess came from a certain environment who would not. I mean, if you're getting a couple of million a year, imagine the level of autonomy you would have if you keep it in your pants, purchase property, set up businesses. I mean, the world is your oyster at that point. Why would somebody and then now, you know, you may not have wanted to wear a suit, you know, that whole profiling thing, but now that your livelihood or your life or what have you is on the line, you now are putting on that suit. Now you look like your Sunday best. But you have to do it before a court because now you're an infant. Now somebody has to point their finger at you and tell you you're a bad little boy and you have to be chastised. And I don't want to be that guy. I never wanted to be that guy. But I'm wondering is there a messaging that could be that we could impart to these young men to understand why don't you want to be a fully realized adult? I mean, having babies and cutting checks it's asinine, and it's an extension of a mentality that's in our community. It goes all the way up to what happened last night, Captain. It's all about I'm a victim. Somebody help me. I have to be told what to do. And to me, if you're making millions of dollars a year and you have your youth, you know, who has to tell you what to do? But it seems odd that you get into situations, this constant, Captain, of seeing black men and women. See, I'm getting into a conversation that we don't want to have as in the communities or in the community, the dysfunctional portion of the community. We're so caught up in somebody did something to us that we can never have the conversation. It's never going to be the right time to have the conversation of what are you doing to you? You know, he put himself in a position to have, for some white man, probably, it could be a black judge, but for the sake of this conversation, let's say for effect, it's that white finger being pointed at you, telling you, you are a baby. I don't want that figure being pointed at me, Captain, ever. And I knew that. How does someone get to be 25, 30, 35 years old, and they're still in the position where somebody has to tell you you're a bad boy, and they got to change your diaper? Metaphysically, black men's diapers are being changed. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, when I saw visually, and we're going to move along, but I had to go into this rant. When I looked at a newspaper and I saw a grown man, physically fit, athletic, he's holding hands with his now wife. It took him I don't know how many women to get to his wife, but he had to have the kids. He had to have the children and the women to get to this woman. Not unlike the Antonio Cromartie deal that we discussed a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. So I'm seeing your woman's holding your hand. She's there to support you, but she's supporting you because you don't have any control, and you're an infant, and that's what it is. It's not the man's fault. It's your fault. And some of what's happening in our community, whether it's going to the polls, whether it's the Republicans winning GOP, the common thread is, when are we going to get our S together as communities? When is that going to happen? No one wants to get up and say, you know what, we got to cut this BS out. Aside from the brutality and all the other stuff that we can say is or is not happening. Let's say that stuff is a reality. Let's say that it's a reality. Now, I don't really believe all this stuff is the reality that other black folks do. I'm not saying people are getting beat up out there. I'm not saying that. We can never have the conversation, Captain, that we are screwing up our own autonomy. You know, getting a job, getting your own car, getting some property, I mean, is the white man really preventing you from doing that? That's it. All right, let's get into Ben Stein's racist behind. Ben Stein, you know him from Ferris Bueller's Day Off many years ago. he's actually a very well-educated man.
He's
very well-educated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his pedigree is something to marvel at. But with the pedigree, for whatever reason, we're getting stupidity. And it's hyperbole, certainly. If not, I mean, this is, you know, the hubris, Captain, for someone to levy racism toward the first black person to sit in that White House. Again, we're so bereft of true, effective leadership to smack people like this down. I mean, that's at the core. If you had someone like a Malcolm X, which you no longer have, or Dr. King, or a Adam Clayton Powell Jr., I mean, I could go on. There are so many leaders that the top type of leadership that we had, Ralph Bunche, whoever, all the folks that we had 50 years ago, we do not have an analog or analogs of them in the present day to smack this stuff down. So this stuff just goes out. So what am I talking about? This is a clip from Fox News from a few days ago where Ben Stein makes the argument that the first sitting black president is the most racist president in all of history.
Nonsense.
Well, but what do you say to their claims that Republicans cut budgets, they cut programs that help minorities, that help poor folks, that they are to blame because they make things tougher on those who don't have advantages
because
and are disadvantaged?
The cuts have been absolutely minuscule, absolutely tiny, unbelievably small, and much more important has been the fact that the Republicans, by virtue of supporting 2008-2009 from being a Great Depression, stopped a real economic catastrophe. I mean, the Republicans are the ones who saved this economy, not the ones who ruined this economy. And as I say, whatever little tiny cuts they might have made here or there in welfare programs, and they were tiny, absolutely tiny. Look, by the way, let me back up a second, Shannon. What are they talking about? More people are on food stamps than ever.
That's
more
true.
People are getting welfare than ever. What cuts are they talking about? Racialized voting in this country. This president is the most racist president there has ever been in America. He is purposely trying to use race to divide Americans. Anyone who investigates it even a little bit knows it's hogwash.
Well, you know that the White House presses back vehemently against those kinds of arguments or those suggestions that the president or that Eric Holder overseeing the, you know, the Justice Department, that they're using race as a way to motivate or to divide. But you seem like you're pretty adamant about that.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Eric Holder by the white police. The white police are beating up on the poor black people. Look, that's just nonsense. And anyway, even if it were true, we don't know if the police are Republicans. The idea that in some way any kind of incident that happens which victimizes a black person is a Republican plot is just nonsense. I mean, they might as well say it's a plot by people from outer space.
But
it just doesn't hold any water.
Has the GOP, though, done a bad job of changing that perception? If that's how those in the African-American community feel, that's their perception. They feel targeted.
Well, they're allowed to feel however they want to feel, but it's basically just an excuse for saying, look, I'm going to vote for President Obama, my own race. I mean, that's what it basically comes down to. Obama has basically said, and they're handing out pamphlets about this. It's been described a lot in the Wall Street Journal. They're handing out pamphlets saying, look, the Republicans are targeting President Obama because he's black. You're black. You've got to go out and support him. That's just nonsense. The Republicans are the most pro-black party there's ever been. The Republicans are the ones who passed all the civil rights laws back in the 60s, not the Democrats.
That gets lost in the conversation a lot. All right, Ben Stein, we didn't mean to get you worked up, but it's always good to see you.
Well, I'm sorry to get worked up.
It's good to have you here.
It's an honor to be here.
And come back soon.
I would like to. Thank you very much.
You know, you hear what he says, folks, and then there's a story that I'm going to just mention. I don't have enough time to really – we only have about 2 minutes remaining. But as he says that President Obama is the most racist president in the United States, as he says that, there's an initiative taking place in Washington. Washington and Virginia. Washington, I'm pretty sure Bison is aware of this. They have their own tri-state area as well in Washington, D.C. In that area, you have a philanthropist who is, his name is David Rubenstein. Rubenstein is putting together a, because he's a history buff, he's putting an initiative together to garner millions of dollars to repair the slave quarters of President James Madison's estate. I can barely get through this with a straight face. As Ben Stein throws out there, now Ben Stein was a speechwriter. I knew I was correct today. He was a speechwriter for Nixon and I believe Gerald Ford. This guy, full Ivy League pedigree. Degrees from Columbia, Yale, and Yale Law School. So we're talking about somebody who scholastically is of a certain, cut from a certain cloth. But he is an idiot. You know, just, it goes beyond hyperbole. It's just patently false. There's no way. How do you explain that we're putting money together to rebuild the slave quarters that belong to James Madison that have had I mean, we're doing that
hold
now.
As he said it,
Rubenstein is getting the money to recreate the slave quarters for historical purposes of a sitting president. Go ahead.
Say it again. That's what I wanted you to say. Say it again.
As Ben Stein made the statement, as he says that, from a former sitting president, historically speaking, James Madison, the Montpierre estate, going through a refurbishing experience, to have the slave quarters on that estate rebuilt or recreated. James Madison, he owned slaves, and for historical purposes, we're actually putting those slave quarters back to where they once were. James Madison, and he's not the only sitting president that owned slaves. That's just one part of the racial. We can go much, and that's going back. We could go forward a little bit in our time machine. And look at and listen to some of the recordings of the person he wrote the speeches for, Nixon. Nixon said on tapes that you could listen to on YouTube, he referred to, and Stein is of Jewish descent. He spoke very poorly of Jewish people and of black people. The person he wrote speeches for, but Obama is the most racist one. Come on now. I mean, we could talk about how Woodrow Wilson lauded over Birth of a Nation, that infamous racist film. I mean, there are so many presidents that were far more openly racist. But the amount of gall, unmitigated gall that this man has to label after all those presidents, the lone black guy, the 43 other presidents, the problem. But the 40, we had to go from 43 to get to one black guy, and the lone black guy that's sitting there is the most racist one, bypassing all the white ones that own people. I mean, do you understand how stupid this guy is? And I hate to go back to the black man, but we do not have a power-based leadership to smack this nonsense down. Can you imagine having a Malcolm X still with us and him totally obliterating this type of stuff? But this stuff just lingers, and nobody's able to smack this stuff down. That is the problem. That is the problem, Captain. I mean, it's so patently stupid. I don't know. I don't know. This is you know, tell you the truth, something like this should make, if black folks were on top of their game, something like that should make Fox News should be getting so many calls and so much weight them down for being that stupid, because that's not a, what kind of news program, you're not, I mean, you know, obviously it's a propaganda outfit, but you just can't say anything. I mean, but they're allowed to say anything without, you know, without any kind of response, without any rebuttal. Where's the rebuttal to knock this down? You know, but you've got the World Star Hip Hop going on, Captain, and you got the media takeouts, and you got your Al Sharpton, and your Jesse Jackson. I mean, you look what we have as respondents to this kind of stuff. You have a whole litany of minstrel programming. The minstrel programming cannot coexist with this kind of stuff, because when you have the minstrelsy going on, then you have no. There's just in a universe. Oh yeah, he's racist. Yeah, he's racist. No, there should be a powerful response to shut it down. The black folks in the 60s, I don't think this would have gone down easy. I think they would have been able to shut down some of this stuff. But you got a whole bunch of minstrels out here. We got about 2 minutes remaining, Captain. Any thoughts on this?
It's going to be interesting to see how America reacts later on, when we go from the black president to the woman, if not the next term, the term after that. We eventually get it. Just to see the sexism, the sexist remarks. It's going to be interesting. We're going to see it. We'll be around to see it very soon. It'll be interesting just to see how the dynamic switches, to see what we're really dealing with here in America. That's all. That's all I'll say to this. This is just foolishness, you know. And one other thing. When he said it, he realized, based on his tone and his voice, maybe I made a misstep with that, but I'm going to just keep going because I can do that. That's how it came off his tongue. Just wanted to add that there.
Hey, I mean, come on. But, it's the hubris that gets me, that you can actually label the black guy. The first, listen, we had to go through all that racism just to get to all that racism and pain and duress and decades, centuries, to get to the one, to get to the point to have a lone black person sitting there. He's acting as if we've always had the ability to have a black person sitting in the White House. It took us to 2008. You know what I mean? It took us to 2008 to even consider having a black. Before that, it was a fantasy of Ferris Bueller proportions. That's what gets me. Just on itself, Captain. We have a black guy sitting there because of 200 some odd years of racism. We had to get past all of that to get to the 21st century to even look this way. It is what it is, Captain. I'm done, folks. We'll be back Saturday. More of a pulp cultural discussion. A lot to get into. Let's go to Grace Jones. Grace Jones, Williams Blood. Williams Blood. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m. It's been fun.
You can't save me. You can't save a wretch like me. Settle down.
gonna be a Jones, just like Utah. And die, God bless his soul. Angels.